Hello and welcome to another Connecting Consciousness. It's the 5th of April. We seem to be getting busier and busier and busier, and each time I say that, we still get busier. So at some point it's got to slow down a little bit. Looking at the notes I'd put on the website, I now realise with hindsight that my comment on Planet X shouldn't have gone out on the 1st of April. Surprising as it may seem, I had no context of the 1st of April. Of course, I know that it's April Fool's Day, but when I'm doing the sort of work, I don't really think about such things. And it is real. That's a real post. I know, looking now, for others have told me, other people have put fictitious posts out. I think Benjamin Fulford did one about Visa on April the 1st. So I can see the pattern there, but no, genuinely, the information I have there, I have been given, is correct. And in hindsight, I would have put it out on the 2nd of April. But I've always believed if I've had something that I'm reasonably happy with, I don't sit on it. That's what the elite do. They withhold information from the people. And so regardless of the fact it was the 1st of April, I put it out. So that's on that one. First of all, thanks again to Sasha Stone, who very kindly allowed me to do a sort of a interview. It's a cross between an interview and a round table, really, regarding 5G. I know that many of you have watched that. If you haven't, please do. It's an exceptionally well prepared and presented interview that he did regarding 5G, and then all the people he got on board, interviewers and clips they managed to get. And some of it was, I found, quite astonishing. I was totally astonished at lawmakers in the United States of America who were openly admitting on camera they had no knowledge of what 5G was, in other than it would just make things a bit faster. And here you begin to get the picture as to why these things have been steamrolled through, because those people who are entrusted to protect and to serve just don't have a clue. So that is very useful, and please watch that if you can. Really wanted to also talk about the fact that my volume, apparently, on the interview I did with Sasha Stone wasn't so good, and that's because we were using Zoom and the microphone was built into the computer. We use Zoom because it's a little bit more stable platform for something like that, because Sasha was in the United States when we did that interview. And I'm sorry that the audio wasn't as good. We had a visitor who came to the house to have a visit, and they brought me some presents, and some of these presents were not political. I wouldn't show political presents because I've always tried to steer away from being too involved in politics, but I have been given a present which is about the office of the president. I've been told I have to put this on, so I'm going to go on for about 10 seconds and it's coming off again. Here it goes. There's the hat, and it says Air Force One, the Presidential Crew, Washington. There, I've worn it. For people who are not connected to the US, you might think, well, what's so special about that? The person concerned who came to visit and had a four-hour meeting with the person, had met President Trump on Air Force One. Now, I'm not sure whether the Air Force One was actually in flight at the meeting time, whether it was parked on the runway, but anybody who has a meeting with the president is entitled to some freebies, and this person was given the cap, the hat that you have when you're on Air Force One. And this person said, I have a friend back in Britain, could I have one for him? And sure enough, got one. The person had this conversation with President Trump, wanted to have a chat with me over a number of ideas they had, some projects that they had in mind, and it was very, very helpful to have that conversation. I have some other presents which I'll show at a later date, which again are not political, but are just rather amusing, and I think you might find them quite good to look at. All right, so that's the visitor side. I want to talk about connecting consciousness a little bit. I'm very, very proud that we're now in a position where all regions of the United Kingdom Great Britain have a coordinator, and we just literally managed to appoint someone for the southeast of England, which I'm very pleased about. It's obviously one of the big areas. So now all areas have a coordinator, which means that the individual members can now begin to receive their emails, get friendship groups going, coordinate and attend both physical meetings and online meetings. And it was odd because we thought it would be easier in Britain, but it actually was harder. Some of the other countries are considered a country, but Great Britain, with its county system, you know, people in Cornwall consider themselves very different from people in Yorkshire, for instance. So it was quite a challenge, but we're really delighted and pleased that that's done. So thank you to all the coordinators. And if you haven't yet joined Connecting Consciousness, please go onto the website and join, and then you'll be directed through to your local coordinator. We have also just appointed a French coordinator as well. Not in post yet, but somebody that I know personally. And he will be coordinating the French group. So please send a mail in. And if we don't have a coordinator in your area, but you'd like to be a coordinator, well, then you can, you know, start and get one going. I wanted to talk about that. The business with the what's called the wall, although it's now becoming the fence, there is another backstory to this. And those of you who are quite sharp-eyed or sharp-witted, when you were seeing the interview or the interview between myself and Sasha Stone, we had a bit of banter between us. And you may have picked up that we'd had some discussions, you know, on other topics, which we didn't feel that we could necessarily bring to the table at that point. I've got far less concern for American citizens regarding 5G than I have for anyone else. In other words, from what I'm picking up, and it is early days, that something is being done to reduce or literally knock out 5G, the harmful aspects of 5G, which ought to protect the United States of America. Unfortunately, there isn't another lawmaker anywhere else on the planet who is prepared to do the same thing at the moment. And so my concern is for every other country. One of the latest news, of course, is that Brussels, the city of Brussels in Europe, has banned 5G. I don't know if it's the first city, but it's one of the major cities that's actually come out and banned 5G. So the question surely is begging here, is that why would one city decide to ban it, yet everyone else is saying how fantastic it is? So what is it that they know that other lawmakers in other cities don't know? Or what is it that they're allowed to do? Why are they allowed to ban it in Brussels? And I think Becky, you can tell me, isn't there a notice board when you arrive saying Brussels, the centre of Europe?
Strasbourg. Centre of the EU, I think.
Oh, that's right. So Strasbourg says...
Capital of Europe, I think.
Capital of Europe, yes. So Strasbourg has a board on it now when you enter and says the capital of Europe. But Brussels is also a place where we do associate a lot of the elite high-end people within the European Union to be. And so it's very, very telling that the city has banned 5G. Also, France has banned all Wi-Fi from all of their nursery schools. So why is it that one country is doing this and another country isn't? So, you know, these are questions that seriously need to be asked. I am concerned about 5G. It's becoming the main issue. Remember that 5G is part of the AI attack. I consider it AI. I consider it as part of the rollout program that AI have. And I've always said for the last 2 years, 3 years maybe, that AI is a greater threat to humanity than the reptilians. And goodness knows the reptilians are a bad enough threat. But AI has the potential to seriously undermine humanity. That's why we mustn't allow it to, you know, come to fruition. So that's it really. I didn't want to go on to huge amount of detail, but I am hoping in the next week to have some more information which would be quite helpful and maybe not really well known. So I'm not trying to tease or hold anything back. I genuinely am waiting for something that I can have confirmation of and I can be more open with it. All right, thank you. I want to get straight into the questions now.
Okay, thank you very much. Just before we do, I just wanted to say about the UK Connecting Consciousness membership is that we actually have about 750 members who are registered. And this is one of the reasons why we have regional coordinators, because we want our members to be able to meet up in person, just like our London group can, whether it's weekly or monthly or, you know, whatever's appropriate for this region, for the region. And this is what the regional coordinators are working towards. At the moment, they're just working with the new members and connecting them on Facebook or WhatsApp groups and via email, and arranging meetings on Zoom or Skype so that everyone's starting to get to know each other. And some regions are slightly ahead of others, but our regional coordinators also meet once a month on Zoom and can share ideas on what's going on where. So it's really very exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it is great.
Okay, thanks. The first question is from Jenny in Australia. Hi, Simon. I recently woke up about 3 a.m. to see a white alien. It was white like snow. The alien had eyelashes, and the eyes were larger than ours and slightly slanted around the face. It had a bald head with a diamond-shaped skin pattern, only one row halfway down on each side of the face. It was about 4 feet tall, with a nose and mouth much like ours. It was holding onto a metal pole that had a gold-coloured tinge. It was looking straight at me, and I didn't have a long time to study it before it disappeared. Can you tell me where this alien comes from? A second question, if you have time.
Well, let's just do that one first. Okay. I can't, because I have never encountered anything like that. What would have been helpful to know was what you refer to as a gold pole. How was it holding it? Was it holding it as you would if you were steadying yourself on the ground? Was it holding it out like you would a sword? So that would have been helpful. The pattern again, this sort of diamond pattern on the skin, not clear from your description whether it's running from top to bottom or from left to right on each side of the face. And that has some connotations of a reptilian history to it, although you're talking about eyelashes. Either we're looking at a complete fake creation, and whatever it was didn't look anything like that, or that is truly what it looked like. And I have never come across anything like that before. You've not said whether it was male or female, or didn't have any agenda to it at all in the feeling. There's no, from your bit, whether there was any communication. The gold rod is the key here. If we could get more information on the gold rod, then that's a technology, because it sure as heck isn't a walking stick, and then I could then have a much clearer idea of where it's coming from. But no, that's a first one on me, so thank you for sharing that. That's really interesting. If anyone else has seen, have experience of something like that, then will you please get in touch and we can try and build a picture, because I have no memory, I don't know anything about that race at all. Thank you. Okay, so maybe we can have the second part of that question.
Okay, the second part is the information about Tartaria and the mud floods historically credible? And actually this is something that quite a few people have been asking.
So that's the second question. Well, right. What I focused on was the word Tartaria, and I've been thinking, well, that's to do with the Tartars, the sort of China and the Russian border and Chinese and all that sort of area there. But mud floods, if, without taking out the Tartarian, I have no idea why that's there, but the mud floods and the finding of buildings below a certain level, buildings that appear to be of the same architectural construction or the architectural design, but for some reason the bottom layer or the bottom floor has disappeared, or in ancient history there appears to be some sort of covering. The question is whether you're dealing with something that's an outpouring from the Great Flood, the Ice Age, which doesn't work if you're talking about buildings that are maybe 200, 300 years old. So if I think about mud floods rather than Tartarian, which means absolutely nothing to me, I'm afraid, there have been a number of these, I believe, in history, right back in time. Some of them considered to be such a local event that other than being reported locally, they didn't ever make the national news. So I don't believe that there's been something that's been like a flood in history where a great tidal wave of mud has, you know, swamped and engulfed lots of cities. But I am open to the view that there are some locations where there has been that. I don't consider it vital. I don't consider it important to today's events. But I do consider that there have been some movements of liquid soil that have engulfed certain buildings. But I have never seen any research from anybody talking about how many deaths or lives were lost from that. My understanding would be it's more relatively recent than necessarily ancient, and you would think that it was in the last 500 years or so it would be reasonably well documented. Maybe it is. So it isn't something I want to spend too much time on, simply because it's, you know, it's not impacting on the earth in a great way as say 5G is. But thank you for the question, because I mean it you know, it's in line with some of the other more interesting debates which we can have when we're not consumed with 5G and AI and reptilians. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next question just says, CC America, warmest greetings, our dear friend Simon. A few of we CC members were discussing your latest website update about Planet X making yet another debut come 2023-24. Would you please elaborate on what we can expect during this tumultuous time, the various permanent and temporary changes of our own planet may undergo, how we can best prepare for anything that comes our way, and what daily life may look like during and after its passage? We know that you've slightly touched on this information before, so thank you for any extra details you can share, especially about the degree of flooding and destruction.
Right, okay. I've never denied Planet X. Never. What I've always said is that I would pull up people who were saying, you know, this year it's going to hit, and, you know, if I go back just between 3 and 5 years, there was a spate on the internet where, you know, every other post was Planet X is going to hit us tomorrow, and, you know, it's going to impact the Earth, and North Pole and the South Pole will swap over and we'll all be dead. And there were just hideous stories that Planet X would be hit. Now, whether it was the same person cracking out 50, 60 posts or whether it was bandwagon, I don't know, but it wasn't helpful. And each time I said, no, that is not going to happen, but there is a Planet X. And I did talk about the Lucifer telescopes, plural, that the Vatican operate. One, of course, is infrared, and the other is a standard telescope. And the standard telescope was always designed to try and pick up Planet X. And what I've been told is that although amateur astronomers probably are not able to see it because it's too far out at the moment, there has been a gravitational effect on some of the other planets in our solar system, the way that light is being bent, the way that these planets are moving. Bodies are moving, and therefore it's been assumed by those who have the technology and the machinery and the budgets that Planet X, or at least a very large body, has finally entered the solar system. Now, I've received that information relatively recently, but on the back of that, I was told that the elite had received this upwards of 3 years ago, and it could be one of the reasons that New Zealand has become such a hot piece of property for the rich, wealthy, elite. Lots of film stars have bought second homes in New Zealand. And in fact, if you get the time, have a quick look, because what they've done in New Zealand, the government, they've fast-tracked people with a lot of money. Normally, you want to be a national, you want to get a passport, you want to become a national of that country, there's a big bureaucratic process to go through. Well, I understand that the New Zealand government has said basically there's a point about that much money you have. So when you have X amount of money, they're fast tracking these people who are buying up tracts of land in New Zealand and buying houses. So you can imagine, on one hand, it's maybe some of the filming from Lord of the Rings made it very popular, or maybe because so much of it is above sea level and the air is very good, and it's quite a good place to be because it won't be disrupted as, say, some other places will be. And so the elite have known, the information I've received, the elite have known for the last 3 years that this body is on its way in. And I now believe that information is now becoming out to the rest of us. I do not believe it's going to hit us. I've never subscribed to the doom and gloom merchants, and the information that I've got is that it will come close to the earth, but it won't hit the earth. We're more likely to be caught in some of the debris trail. This body will be, through its gravitational field, will be pulling bits of rock and ice with it, and it's highly likely that we will get caught in some of that. The information that I have received is that we can expect a large number of the satellites, electronic satellites, to be knocked out through physical impact with these tiny bodies, or indeed electromagnetic gravitational forces. We can expect significant disruption to phones and computers on the Earth. And those of you who have had the chance to listen to me over the last few years, you remember that I reported that I'd been told that in Great Britain, a vast number of telephone poles, electro pylons, communication towers were being double-earthed. And this started about 3 years ago. And I think that program in Great Britain is over with. In other words, they've double insulated wherever they can infrastructure, which we thought at the time was possibly an EMP blast. So you're more likely to survive an EMP blast if you have this extra insulation or conductivity on your electronic equipment. But it's possible that it's not an EMP blast in the sense it's to do with affection of gravitational waves. In other words, somebody somewhere had some information that there was going to be an event of some sort that could impact communications on the Earth. And so if we stick at that, then I think we're fairly secure with that information. So will the pole shift? A lot of confusion here. I've never subscribed to the view that the physical poles would move, that, you know, the two land masses would do a swap. What I expect is the magnetic poles to shift. So north to become south and south to become north. And there's a history of that on this planet. It's irrefutable that 700,000 years ago, there was a magnetic pole shift. And they know that because when they've looked at fallout from a volcano in Africa, these are magnetized, and when they've fallen, they can see that the poles were completely different. It will have effect on maybe insects and birds who perhaps rely on this, but like all living creatures, they will adapt very quickly and they will get the hang of that. So I don't, again, see that as a problem. So any of you who are aspiring business people, perhaps you want to start going into the geographical compass business, and seeing, you know, we can open a stall selling the new geographical compasses. I expect the old ones won't work very well. There will be some effect on water. You put a huge body that close, it's going to suck up the water, and then as it goes past, it drops it down again. Again, I do not expect a deluge. I do not expect the end of the world. But low-lying bits of land certainly could be covered with water. And if you look back over the last 20 years, maybe longer, there have been post after post. Think about Looking Glass. Think about all the projects that sent particularly children or remote viewers into a future on a particular timeline of Earth and came back and did indeed see parts of the East Coast of America and the West Coast of America which had suffered some form of flooding. So if there was anything that was liable to do that, then a foreign object, let's call it Planet X, is most likely. So yes, I do agree that Planet X is on its way in. No, I don't agree that it's going to destroy the Earth. Yes, we should all be able to see it with the naked eye. Certainly our amateur astronomers should start to pick this up in about a couple of years' time. So let's see where we go with that. So I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Sue says, "Hello, Simon. I live in a small hamlet in mid-Suffolk and lately have noticed an increase in helicopter activity over the last several months. However, lately they have been flying very low to the ground below treetops and circling. I also hear them at night time, though not as low. My question is, do you think this is normal routine, or is there something else behind these exercises? Thank you, Sue."
Well, one of the advancements in radar has been able to bring it down lower. So if you're a ground-based radar, in the not so long ago, you used to have quite a big clearance because the clutter from treetops and buildings. But with phased array radar, you can almost bend it over the horizon. So it's become harder if you're a pilot to bring your aircraft to a point that the radar can't discern you from surrounding clutter. And one of the things that the Royal Air Force have been practicing ever since the days of the Cold War was how you can conceal yourself behind a tree line. With the advent of the helicopter gunships, this became even more something that was practiced, because you could pop up, fire a missile and pop down again. So it could quite easily be legitimate practices. Suffolk's quite a flat country. I think you'd be quite hard pressed to find hills to hide under, but I guess there's the odd hedgerow. In order to truly answer your question, I need some photographs, please. If you can get some pictures of these helicopters, I will be able to tell you very quickly whether we're looking at a regular practice or whether these helicopters are associated with you. You've mentioned circling round. If these helicopters are just out and about, then probably that's what it is. But if they are making a focal point of view, then clearly you might be the target. And if that's the case, you need to have a chat with me, please. I would want to know when this first started, what you'd been doing the day before, and suddenly this all activated. It's very common for people to have an out-of-body experience or to do some remote viewing, and then suddenly all hell breaks loose. They'll have a really interesting experience, and suddenly the helicopters start arriving, or something else occurs. And so there's usually something that triggers it, alerts the people to your presence on another plane, another dimension. Because it's not everybody that gets the helicopters, but when they do come, then they're pretty annoying. So if you'd like to get in touch, please try and get some photographs if you can on your cell phone, on your mobile phone, and then I can best advise you. But it sounds to me as if it's probably more about you than it is about them practicing for any Third World War. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. The next question is from David. It's quite long, but I'll read it all through.
Okay.
"Dear Simon, thank you for all that you're doing for us. I am honestly baffled by some of your website's current news postings. For example, why do you attach so much importance to predicting the time certain events will take place? I have huge respect for you, and this would not be diminished if you said something like this event is going to happen, but without a timeline. And I wouldn't respect you more if you got one of the dates correct. I have worked with many mediums and psychics over the years, and I know firsthand how difficult it is to predict the approximate date of a future event. Also, I'm struggling to understand how the loss of an MI6 chief's son has any relevance to the website. Thank you."
Okay. Right, thank you. I appreciate it. It's a fair question. Thank you. Because those were the dates I was given. When I'm not given any dates, I can't be specific. But when I'm given a specific date, I'll give it. And I had two separate sources, not related to each other, give me almost exactly the same dates. And I understand that those are dates that have been worked out because of the speed of the object. And if it stays on its present trajectory, its present course, that is what's expected. Now, I remember other people had predicted a large spacecraft, which some 2 to 3 years ago were expected to come into our realm. And indeed, I think they were accurate. But what happened in those spacecraft is that they basically came to a halt, or they decided to change course, which makes it very difficult for the person that's actually predicted that. And, you know, it could make that person look a fool. But what do? You say, well, I don't want to give a date, because if I'm wrong, then people are going to think I'm a fool. But supposing that comes true, and people will say to you, well, why didn't you tell us? You knew when the date was. Why didn't you tell us? We could have, you know, at least prepared something. So yes, it's difficult, because each person has to make his or her decision as to whether they go public. And I've always said that if I get confirmatory evidence from a completely different source that backs up the first point, then I'm on a bound and must go out and say that. And that's why I've given the dates. If I haven't given dates previously, it's because I never had those exact dates. So I hope that helps. The point about the MI6, I was particularly careful on that. There is a secondary story there. It's ongoing at the moment. There are certain people there are some commentators refer to good people as white hats. That's quite a common usage. I haven't really used that term. It just seemed a bit odd to me, really, but I just call them good people. Who are being threatened, and pressure is being brought to bear on a number of good, what the Americans will call patriots. You think about the attack in New Zealand, partly, yes, that was to traumatize, but it was also to send a message. It was a message saying, if you don't do what we want, this is the sort of thing that can happen. And, you know, it's like the Austin Powers films where the crazy madman, he wants to do a demonstration. Or think about the James Bond films where the crazy madman was going to do a demonstration to the world and show the power he's got, and then he can ransom or blackmail the world. And so what we're seeing here is what we've always seen by these megalomaniacs, which is, I will do this as a warning to you, and in future you do what I want or you'll get more of the same. And I put that out there because please don't look at things as exactly as they're sold to you. You know, please look at something and understand it as part of a bigger picture that's going on. I'm also very sympathetic towards the people who suffered there. But there will be, over the weeks ahead, there'll be more information on this that can come out. Things are a bit raw at the moment. But there is a war going on. You know, it's not a war with battleships and aircraft and bombs. It's a very insidious, part covert, part not war that's being taken. And both sides are involved in that. You know, there are a number of key people who've been taken out. And under the guise of natural causes, just as the bad guys took out a lot of good people, and the stock answer is suicide. You think of Princess Diana. That was sold to the world as a tragic accident. But of course, when it came to the court hearing in Great Britain, it did go down as unlawful killing. You know, and that's something really important to understand, that even the judge at the time, the highest that he could give, he couldn't say murder. That's how controlled and unfree the society is that we live in. The judge wasn't allowed in the statute to declare it a murder. And so he directed, in Diana's case, he directed the jury to say, well, the best I can give you is unlawful killing. So there are a number of people who have been unlawfully killed. And so that's why that's on that website. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sydney says, "Hi Simon and Becky, thank you both for all your efforts. I would like Simon's thoughts on the alleged event that took place in a laboratory in Japan where robots turned on technicians, actually killing some of them. The most worrying aspect would seem to be the fact one of the robots was receiving information from an outside source by satellite."
Right, I only have partial stuff on this. It became of interest to me because it's AI, and I do take an interest in that because that's one of the aspects that we are facing that could be quite serious for humanity. I'm aware that there was an accident. Let me just put it to you like that. There was an accident, and it was Japanese, I believe, who were at the cutting edge of transmitting commands to an artificial brain and seeing if, you know, physical limbs could move, not the nonsense that we see on YouTube where some clumsy device, you know, is lumping towards something, you know, and then it very badly picks it up and stumbles away again, and everybody's jumping up and down and saying, "That's wonderful, isn't it?" And it clearly isn't. One of the most dexterous tests is actually to get a machine that looks like a person to actually use a keyboard, to actually give them a sentence to type out and then see if they'll do that. My understanding was that this information was being received not from within the laboratory, but from a satellite, because again, like 5G, they were attempting to see how things can be done without wires. And I understand that one of these machines, something happened. Now, I think the person who's written in said two, did you say two scientists? But I don't think anything was named. Okay, well, I only heard that one person.
That one of the robots was receiving information from an outside source.
No, but two humans were attacked.
Robots actually killing some of them.
Some of them, correct. So two of them, but I've only heard that one was either seriously injured or hurt. But so there is some truth behind that. But before we consider or worry that AI has affected it and attacked it as deliberate, it could simply be another instance where a machine literally becomes self-aware and looks at a person and says, "You're not like me, I'm going to terminate you." And I use that word deliberately. You know, this is the bit that we're not being told. We're being told how wonderful all this is. It'll save our life, just like the spinning Jenny or Arkwright's water wheel in the days of the early Industrial Revolution were sold as, you know, we don't need people anymore because, you know, we don't need a huge factory, don't need a huge workforce. You know, the steam engine will do this and then the electric engine will do that. And what we've seen is a reduction in the number of people employed, but an upskilling of those that have been employed. But as we've now gone into the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen the number of people required reduced dramatically, and the number of technocrats, or the number of very skilled people being highly clever in their own field, being hugely reduced. In other words, during the Industrial Revolution, there were lots and lots of people who were needed to feed the machines. But what we have now with this digital revolution is that we need a far smaller group of people to feed the machines. So therefore, it is wrong for the media to sell technology as a tool to make your life easier. How can this hugely advanced machinery make your life easier? You know, open the garage doors for you, turn on the fridge to a higher setting, turn on the heating, turn on the television. If you don't have a job to be able to pay for these things because you don't have the skills now required for this very top level, because AI has taken over so much of your work. You know, if you go into a storage holding area and you were to go back 40, 50 years ago, you would have seen lots of people physically putting boxes onto shelves. Well, now you might have one or two people and everything else automated. Maybe that's an overstatement, but hugely automated. Well, can you imagine a situation where you just don't need people at all because there are artificial machines that will do it and control it? So what's going to happen to all these millions of people who no longer have a job? Oh, I know. 5G. Wipe out all those people. You don't need them then. You just have a world that's devoid of maybe most people, and then the elite who have somehow managed to protect themselves can enjoy a Sunday afternoon stroll without having to meet another single human being. And that may sound very crazy to many of you, but reality is that for the last 30, 40 years, that has been the plan. And we'd hoped that the crazy people who had come up with that plan had perhaps shelved it. But now we see with the rollout of 5G that actually that plan is very much back on the agenda. So thank you for that. My understanding is one person was either seriously hurt or killed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Adrian says, "Hi Simon and Becky, why do you think that so many people in the UK think that it's best to stay in the EU? And from what I gathered, why do you think the opposite? In your opinion, what are the potential benefits of the UK leaving the EU? Greetings from Hungary."
Okay, thank you. Obviously, I try not to be hugely political. I try to go to threads or ideas that should transcend politics. It's very fashionable for people to believe that they're European. I mean, I can, I suppose, claim to be European but not be a part of the European government. My issue stems from the fact that I'm old enough to remember back to the early 1970s when people were asked in Great Britain to vote, and I suppose all the other countries had a vote, whether they wanted to join a European economic community. A European economic community. And everybody said, what is the EEC? And what we were told was it's a common market. It's a market that allows you to buy and sell trade. So for instance, Great Britain had always done trade with Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and any other country that we'd had an association with. But being part of a common market allowed Great Britain to trade without difficulties with France, Germany, Spain, Italy, etc. So that's what people voted for. And then without ever coming back to the British people, they suddenly created a government within Europe. And suddenly we were electing members of parliament, lawmakers, to go to Europe to make laws which took precedence over the ones in Great Britain. So, you know, why are we voting for our own lawmakers to sit in our own country when we're voting for lawmakers in another country who are telling us what to do? So I began to be concerned because I felt that this was a one world government. And indeed, some of these very senior presidents who are involved in this government have said that they see this as the great experiment. That's their own words, the great experiment. And, you know, for those of you perhaps not aware, the European Union is now creating its own army, literally its own army. And the Council of Europe has said that they don't trust America, they don't trust Russia, they don't trust China, so they want their own army. But what was NATO? North Atlantic Treaty Organization was about all the European countries and the non-European countries who are anti-communist aligning together, and we are, as Great Britain, as a member of NATO. So, gone from the early 70s voting to go into an environment that was basically a marketplace to now a place that considers itself the government of Europe, now on the verge of starting its own army. That to me isn't good. That is centralization of power. That is the organization which is a very long distance away from other countries, making rules and regulations that are not necessarily beneficial to those people, and your own lawmakers can't overturn those rules. Now, this was clearly understood by 17.5 million, whoever it was that voted to leave. And so although the Leave number, I think Leave only had about 1.5 million votes more than the Remain, Great Britain is not a proportional representation electoral system. We are a first-past-the-post system, which means that each constituency, each area, is won or lost by a straight number of votes. So if you literally have one vote more or two votes more, you've won. Now, if you look at the huge parliamentarian map of Great Britain, nearly every constituency in England, nearly everyone voted to leave. So if you were to colour code them, you would see that maybe 90-odd% voted to leave and 10% didn't. So that's, whether you believe in proportional representation or not, that's not my point. The point is that from a historical point of view, every election in Great Britain has been fought this way. And so clearly the majority of people expressed in this manner wanted to leave. And the reason for that was that people were concerned and worried that this central authority was beginning to take over Great Britain. Now, what will be the benefits? The guy called King, who was the old Bank of England director, so I think it's Mervyn King, the Bank of England director, has just come out and said actually leaving the EU is going to be a good thing. Now that's really amazing, isn't it? Because those people who are in the pension, they're receiving their wages, they're all under orders to say we've got to stay in Europe. But some of these people who ought to know, like the chairman of the Bank of England or the director of the Bank of England, you know, he's now coming out saying actually, you know, it's fine to leave. I think in the short term it'll be difficult for this country, but I think in the middle term and the long term it'll be very good, because we can open up trade deals with other countries just as we did before we went in, and we will not be beholden to a club, because that's what it is, a club of obviously Europeans. Let's be honest, lots of people in the French government don't like the British. There are other countries that don't like the British, and that's fair reason for that. The British have interfered in other countries over the last 300 or 400 years. But that means that it's not a very friendly club. And so we have suffered, and there's factual evidence for that. We've suffered as a country in terms of the deals that we've done. And that's bent up resentment. So I think it's better that Britain is separate from Europe, finds its own level, and then if the euro collapses, look what happened to Greece. Look at these countries that now are beholden totally to the central bank. I think Greece is something like 25 years in hock to the European Central Bank. So children not even born, when they are born, they're going to be paying these taxes to the central bank. And you know, it's not good, I think, being bailed out by an organization that considers itself a separate political entity, because it can then say to you, well, we'll do this, but this is the price you pay. So I haven't changed my mind. I think it's right for Britain to leave. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. Okay, thank you. George says, Dear Mr. Parks, some time ago I was hearing some of your statements and interviews, and now, for about a month, I followed your information and answers to questions. Many times when you respond, you say dimensions, and this is when I find it difficult to follow you. I really like to hear you, so I'd like you to explain to me, please, as detailed as possible, what you mean and what you understand by dimensions. I thank you very much in advance, and I wish you the best, and I hope that one day we will all be free.
So do I. Thank you. Well, I'll give you the organic brain version first. Thank goodness for the Hadron Collider at CERN. People would be surprised to hear me say that. And of course, I don't really mean that, do I? But a year and a bit ago, they actually officially announced that the fourth dimension could be proven to exist. Hallelujah. So the CERN Hadron Collider officially has proven that the fourth dimension exists. And they punched a tiny little hole about a millimeter across through into the fourth dimension. And that's really important, simply because people like myself and many, many, many others who've been talking about dimensions can't be laughed at anymore. Because here we have the tie and shirt and suited brigade, or the white jacket, the white coat brigade, the scientific brigade, pontificating that they have discovered the fourth dimension really exists. Good. So we've got that. That's the 3D element of it. A dimension is a reality that might appear to a scientist as thin as a piece of paper, but because time doesn't operate as we understand it, you might be able to get the city the size of New Orleans in there. The biggest jump in all of the dimensions is between the third and the fourth. Not between the sixth and the ninth, or the tenth and the twelfth, though the twelfth is special, but between the third and the fourth. Because when you go into the fourth dimension, the concept of time in the fourth is relatively similar to the concept of time in the fifth, sixth, and seventh. So the big problem we have here in the third reality is our understanding and our interaction with the physical concept of time. And that means that time and space are split, whereas in reality they are part of the same thing, and time and space can be morphed and moved. So without that understanding, it's very hard to grasp why these other dimensions can be so different from ours. And it's very, very, very difficult to go up the ladder. You only go up the ladder to the dimensions when you have evolved. Evolved not as a fish coming out of the water and growing legs and walking around, but evolved in terms of your spiritual development. So you don't win the medal to the next level up because you've got a transistor that's 10 times smaller than the one that was invented 2 weeks ago, or a cell phone that, you know, is so small that you can lose it in your shoe. The reality here is that it's about your spiritual development, your concept of who you are and who you are to those around you, the responsibility you have to the planet and the life forms on the planet. Now that has been, not taken away, but it's been totally deflected by this concept of materialism, by AI, by technology, and that the media push that it's okay to, you know, basically walk over anybody just to get that latest device. You know, do this, do that, and it's okay. You know, we're not rewarding people who do humanitarian things. We're not rewarding people who do wonderful acts of kindness because it's just not seen as right. You know, what hit gets all the hits on YouTube are the beautiful film stars and starlets who you know are having their champagne. What clothes are they wearing? You know, what television show do they wear? What makeup do they have? And then from the guy's point of view, you know, what was the game like? And this seems to take everyone's time rather than looking around them and looking at the destruction and the sadness and the pain and the poverty and thinking, well, actually, maybe I should be spending some of my time on trying to do some good here and not just be totally fixated on one day I might win the national lottery. And if I win the national lottery, I'll go on foreign holidays and I'll buy myself this and I'll buy myself that. And people creating a false life for themselves in the hope that one day they will pull themselves out of the very depressed situation they're in and aspire to something that in reality they're not going to get, because they are being deflected from focusing on what they can achieve and who they are and what's important to them on this never-ending wheel of, well, if I can obtain this, then I'll obtain that, and if I can get that, I'll go on and do this. So that's the problem with this reality. Once we've broken into that, we then have the chance to evolve. The fourth dimension is divided into two, although it's not an obvious divide, what we call the lower fourth, and then the main body of the fourth dimension. In the lower fourth are where the bad guys are, bad because they have stuck in a never-ending cycle of self, self, me, I, and as a result of that, not only have they not evolved or stood still, they began to sink back, whereas some of the other more human forms in the fourth dimension have begun to move up into the fourth. So that's the fourth, and you've got the fifth and the sixth. But in order to get up to there, we've got to be able to do this. When we make this move, and I do believe that we will, we won't have to go into the fourth and stay there. You see, this is a third dimensional Earth, but unfortunately the control system is not from this Earth. It's been brought here, it's been crafted. The energies come from the fourth dimension. So hierarchy is not natural to this Earth. Think about the police force or the army. Think about how we have marks and emblems to give us a rank. Think about in an ordinary job, how people have different positions. Think about how we look on people and artificially rank them. So that person makes $100,000 or pounds a year, that person makes 300,000. They must be better than that person. Oh, I only make 10,000 or 20,000. I'm not as good as these people. And that's the concept that's been sold. And so when you understand that is not natural to humanity. I mean, when did the North American Indians have that? They didn't. And that's why they were partly exterminated, because they were resistant to this corrupt, satanic, fourth dimensional energy. So when we evolve, we don't need to stay in the fourth dimension. Once we break through, we don't just break through the third dimension, we break through all of the control elements which are fourth dimensional created. The evil AI is fourth dimensional in its concept. So we should go straight through from the third to the fifth. You see, in the fifth, there's no such thing as paedophilia. There's no such thing as Satanism. They only existed in the fourth and were brought to the third. So our concept of time will staggering, absolutely huge revelation. It's a concept of time that will change, and space. But we'll keep our physical form. We won't even become a light body, but we will keep a physical form, because the fifth dimension is the home of the Andromedans, the Palladians, and the Arcturians, and there are other groups. Those are the three groups that have most affected on humanity. And so these are what people call the Space Brothers. It's not a term I use, but it's a term that's quite popular. This is the family that which we are destined to join, and who will willingly accept us. But there's no Seventh Cavalry. You know, you can't blow on a bugle and someone's going to land in a spaceship and say, I'll just wave my magic wand and you'll all come up to the fifth. You know, how did the Palladians get to the fifth dimension? They didn't get there because somebody waved a magic wand and took them up there. They got there because they overcome the tasks that were given to them. They saw through the lies and they progressed. And if we wish to do the same, we have to do that. So no one's going to come and save us. Each one of us contains the elements within which we can save ourselves. The point is whether we choose to do it. So perhaps not the answer you're expecting, but that's the answer I've given you. And thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you very much. The last question of the day is by Paul, who says, "Hi Simon and all of the dedicated team for bringing up the minute.
Tired, we've been working.
Hi Simon
hard.
And all of the dedicated team for bringing up to the minute truth what's happening in our world today. My question is concerning the Hadron Collider, as I've heard so many stories about what it's really doing, and if you would clarify the pros and cons of the machine, and does it have anything to do with the positive or negative outcomes regarding the balance of our planet? And is it only humans who are involved in its creation and purpose for future of science of evolution of the human race? Thank you."
That's a much harder question than perhaps people would think. You'd expect me to launch straight off on it. It's actually quite difficult. There are some benefits to it. The benefits are that very primitive, understood science can actually advance itself. In other words, it's not that people are primitive, it's the constraints on them, the rules on them. You can't think here, you can't do this, you can't do that. If you think that, you won't get funding for it. So you have to do this, otherwise you won't get any money for it. That's the control system. So when, for instance, the Hadron Collider proved the fourth dimension, that must have freed people. Some scientists somewhere are good, perhaps the majority are good, but they just worried about the pension. So when it proved to them the fourth dimension existed, it means that the science books have to be rewritten. You know, the books of 10, 20 years ago have got to be rewritten now, because they would only theorize that there was possibly a fourth dimension. They would scoff and laugh at it. But now, of course, they can't. Those books are completely out of date. So there are some benefits to it. The difficulty is that whenever something good is created, something bad wishes to corrupt it. You know, the Nobel Prize winner who created dynamite, and I was only talking to this the other day, who created dynamite because he really wanted to be able to save miners in caves. And dynamite was a fantastic way of blasting and blowing up. Didn't for one moment imagine that someone would say, I've got a great idea, we'll put this in a metal casing, drop it from the air and kill people on the ground. And often, time and time again, the fourth dimensional satanic energy takes hold and takes what is a pure, a good creation and turns it for evil. As far as I'm concerned, the Hadron Collider is a dangerous device. It is staffed predominantly by humans, but there are some, as you would expect, underground chambers, and there are some things under there who have been advising and directing. I would like to basically, if I was in charge, I would offer all of the staff in that facility a lovely holiday in somewhere in Switzerland, and then when everybody had come out, I just poured 20 trillion tons of concrete down into it, because it's of no help whatsoever, and is being used for purposes that do not further the development of humanity on this planet. So thank you. Now there's no list of thank yous today, because I have been busier than usual, and I haven't had the time to do that, and I am really sorry. And you know, it is important to me to thank people. So those of you who've put donations in, I'm really grateful. Couple of points quickly. Somebody was saying, you know, oh, you don't monetize your channel, and it's right, there aren't any adverts in this, and I really don't want to go down that road. That's a personal thing. I'm not making any comment about anybody else's channel. I personally don't want to monetize it, so you know, I'm going to resist putting adverts on these shows for as long as possible. And people's donations, you know, they actually help me to make sure I don't need to do that. So that's really good. I wanted to also say that the diary is open, and there are a limited number of slots, or a few slots, but if you did want to have a booking with me, please book. The feedback I've had over the last few months was people just felt half an hour wasn't long enough, and they really wanted to go to an hour because they felt there was so much more. So I've gone to hour slots now for people. So if you haven't yet had a booking with me and you'd like to, please go on to the website and you can book there. Apart from that, I just want to thank everybody, the small dedicated group of volunteers, and that means unpaid, who've worked so hard to keep us afloat, to keep us going. All of the members of Connecting Consciousness who you know, give us support, give us encouragement, they meet and they try and be spiritual. You know, that's so wonderful. And you know, we've just got to keep going, and we've got to keep going until we come out the other end and we're successful. And I've always believed that. I've never once doubted that we would not be successful. And yes, 5G is a real concern, but I think we're going to come out the other end and be okay. But we may have some problems while 5G is around us. So all I'm saying to you is that it's important to be aware of the issues. But please don't let's go into this, it's the end of the world, because I'm sick of these videos on YouTube that sort of purport to say that humankind is going to be wiped out. That is not the case. Do you really think that whoever created us, whoever it was, and let's say that Source, and I believe it was Source that did that, would allow all of this beauty to be destroyed? So I just want to thank everyone then. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. I think we're seeing more and more the importance of discernment, asking yourself truly, you know, the news you're hearing, does it sound right? Does it seem true to you? Please don't get overly concerned or worried. And if you can take a part in anything that could bring about change on the planet for the better, then do so. You know, we had this discussion with Sasha, and I said quite clearly that, you know, we don't want to incite people to violence. But when you look and see what's going on in France, and you can see that people are expressing themselves through frustration, remember that people generally take to the streets because they have exhausted every other avenue. And as an ex-politician, I know that just because a petition of 100,000 lands on your doorstep doesn't mean you take much notice of it. I have seen with my own eyes where politicians have paid lip service, but have not bothered one way or the other. And so, you know, part of connecting consciousness, setting that up, was to show a different way. I actually believe that if you look at the court system, the police system, the school, the education system, the hospital system, everything has been designed for the organization and the system. I am not attacking those men and women who work in those services. What I'm attacking is the structure. Those at the very top who create these, they create it to make it easier for the system and less easy for the individual. For those of you who have gone into an accident, an emergency ward or a waiting room, from the moment you walk in, you're not important. What's important is the process and the organization. Those school children that go to school, is the education important, or is it the fact that that school receives a amount of money for each pupil it takes? If you think about the court system, is it there really to protect you, or is it there to protect the very wealthy and the corporates? So what I'm saying is that the change we need isn't about throwing a petrol bomb. The change we need is a complete revolution from the ground upwards of the way that humanity views itself, and not to replace one tyrant with another tyrant. A complete and utter change in the way that the system relates to people and the people relate to the system. Now, I'm sure that that's terrifying for large organizations, it's terrifying for governments, but are these organizations there to serve people, or are they there to exploit people? So when a train service or a bus service is there, is that there to serve people, or is it there just to take the fare off them? When you buy something from the supermarket, is that really there to feed you and nourish you and keep you well, or is it to take the money out of your purse or wallet so that it goes to that person who runs that organization? So do an insurance company really care about insuring your car because they want to keep you safe and they want to give you good cover? Or are they concerned that, hey, once you make a claim, we're not going to give you that insurance again because you're eating into our profits? In other words, the difference between the individual and the organization. And so Connecting Consciousness is an effort by me to try to show in a very small way how we need to relate to each other. And I would love the opportunity to roll that out on a wider line. Finally, why should we vote for political parties? I've always said the best way to vote is for an individual to say what he or she will do for a location. So if one person says, you know, I will campaign because we need a new hospital, or I will campaign for a new swimming pool, or whatever it might be, it doesn't matter what it is. And then the cycle comes around 3 or 4 years' time, that person comes back in front of the audience and they're asked, did you do what you said you would do? And if they didn't, they're off, finished. You don't vote for them because they have a particular color or they have a particular badge. You vote for them because you like what they're putting forward, but you can remove them from office because they did not deliver. And the problem with the system we have is that no individual in this country gives out a statement about what he or she will achieve for their local community. What they do is they have a leaflet that's produced centrally, which gives the broad policies of that particular party throughout the country. So you can't tie any member of parliament or lawmaker down Because it can be lost in the great argument about, well, that was at Westminster and it, you know, this happened and that happened. And I think there's a lot to be said for bringing things to a local diktat, to a local way where a group of maybe 100, 200 people form like a cooperative and they put forward somebody. And that's the way it works as a group up. So, you know, we have some changes coming, there's no doubt about it. And you're either going to be on one side of the fence or the other side of the fence. The day when people could sit on the edge of the fence and play both games, that's over. So thank you very much indeed for listening, and I look forward to speaking to you soon. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.